So today I want to share with you some of the larger context in which we've been practicing this week together. So you may have thought you come on a meditation retreat, so we're just going to do meditation. But actually we've been practicing many elements of what is called the Eightfold Path. An Eightfold Path could be considered like the Buddha's prescription for us for getting better from being sick with delusion and suffering. So this is what the doctor gives us to get better. So Eightfold Path is divided into three different sections. So one section is primarily called Wisdom Section. One section is about integrity or ethics. And one section could be considered about meditation. But all are connected. The first aspect of the path is something called right view. And someone had written me a question like, how do you cultivate right view? And really we've been continuing to cultivate right view all of the time of the retreat by listening to Dhamma talks or Dhamma discussion, and then to clarify your understanding in the groups or one-on-one meetings, and then to practice, to see in your own experience. So this is developing right view or wise view. And each of these different segments in the path usually is called like right view or right intention. But the first word of the two-word phrase in each of these ones can be translated different ways. So in Pali it's samma. So sometimes it could be called also skillful view or complete view, but I think in this case a right view works. So this means understanding what's true about the path to freedom, path to freedom from suffering, and what's not true. So what's the cause of happiness? What's the cause of suffering? So getting more clear about that, getting more clear about causality, getting more clear about understanding the Dhamma, so this nature, the truth of how things are. So second one in this wisdom section is cultivating, you could say, right intention or wise intention or skillful intention. So this is to cultivate in our hearts the intentions of goodwill or metta. So we've been doing that to cultivate renunciation. So the opposite of greed or grasping. And to cultivate harmlessness. So opposite of causing harm, opposite of cruelty. So this is inclining us to let go of hatred, of greed, cruelty, and instead to be generous, to be kind, to as much as possible live with wholesome intentions. So you could pay attention to this, and as we are aware in different movements of the day, we could notice like when there's a kind of a lens falling in front of our awareness of grasping, of pushing away, of selfishness in a moment, or generosity in another moment, renunciation. So we kind of tune into that in our practice, and hopefully in the way that we practice, we can continue this through continuity of gentle awareness and be a little more tuned in regular life also, what the intentions are as we're going through. The next segment is about integrity or sila. So practicing with this one, I like the translation of like whole integrity, complete ethics. So the precepts that we talked about in the beginning, so not killing living beings, not stealing things from others, not harming with our sexuality, and then Those are the main ones in this one, interestingly. The speech one is pulled out as its own special one. So also another segment of this Eightfold Path is about wise speech. So before we were practicing primarily noble non-communication, but now that we're talking a little bit, we can practice not lying, avoiding falsehood, avoiding harsh and abusive speech, avoiding gossip, slander, and even avoiding unnecessary speech. So noticing how much we need to talk or let go of. And as we start to re-engage with life also, that could include paying attention to your speech in a form of texting or emails also. A lot of communication done in writing these days. So yeah, what's the tone I'm conveying? So trying to remember there's another person on the other side who received this message. So a couple of tips with this as we re-engage is to pause. So just simply pause before you send an email, send a text, and just check in and feel like, okay, what's the intention here? Am I trying to hurt this person? Is there a lot of ego in this right now? Am I really caught? If so, can I save draft? Come back, look later again when I'm a little bit more at ease. Yeah, even with text, it can happen so quickly. Sometimes if you get good at it, your thumbs, fingers move very quickly and fast as your tongue. And, you know, also you could say things that are harmful. So just taking a little pause and actually feeling into your heart, like tuning into feeling like, oh, what's going on? Is there a kilesa? Is there a sense of hatred? Is there a sense of greed? Is there a big sense of ego, like meanness in this, like, you know, feel what that feels like in the body. And there's a recommendation to attend to right livelihood or wise livelihood, skillful livelihood. So this means what is the way that you make your living habitually? And is the way that you make your living making you categorically, basically, break some of this sila, integrity, ethics. So specific recommended or specific non-recommended professions include dealing in weapons, dealing in people like slavery, prostitution, human trafficking, not dealing in poisons, not dealing in intoxicants. And also not dealing in butchery or killing of animals. So even if you're not doing one of those things, it could be that there's area to look at within your work life. Like, what are the conditions of it? Is this a healthy, positive workplace? Does everyone feel comfortable here? Or are we... are some people being harassed? Or even more kind of nuanced things, like someone told me once, you know, I'm a computer programmer, but the computer programming I'm doing is actually for weapons. So the thing I'm doing is not killing anyone directly, but I'm a consultant. I happen to know that this client, what they're doing with this is it is actually helping to facilitate this war and killing. So there's areas for your investigation there. And most of this is based on understanding what's the path to happiness, like cause and effect for ourselves. And those who are habitually training in doing something that is causing suffering for oneself or others, like to let go of that, find something ideally, like wholesome and positive and helpful to do, but even something sort of neutral to do is also good. And then in the meditation triad, we have wise effort. And within this wise effort one actually falls the practice we've been doing in the evening of cultivating metta, compassion, equanimity, joy, even generosity, forgiveness. So with wise effort, there's four aspects you could pay attention to. Basically, it's noticing wholesome states of mind and unwholesome states of mind. Right? So wholesome is like these positive ones, and unwholesome is like hatred, jealousy, rage, this kind of thing. So it's to know when each of them has arisen, and then to try to let go of the unwholesome ones when they come up, and to try to support the wholesome ones. And then to try to understand causality, like what is the conditions that lead to more of the unwholesome state arising? And what are the conditions that lead to the wholesome state arising? So for example, doing the metta meditation, doing compassion practice are the causes for cultivating wholesome states. But you could also consider in some ways like all the things that we do or put into our mind as also causality for that. So you can notice even things like the music that you listen to or the films that you watch, you know, that impacts your mind in some ways. So it's like kind of like the diet for your mind and heart. You could also consider who you hang around and what the habits are of the people you hang out with. So it's much easier to be generous and kind when you hang out with people who are generous and kind. If you hang out with people who are more aggressive or who practice any of the kind of more unwholesome habits, then it's easier for your mind to fall into those states too. So wise effort, then right mindfulness. So this is good. We've been doing this as much as possible for 9 days. Check plus, good. This is cultivating mindfulness with wisdom. So with the understanding of the context around it. So practicing awareness, and we've been doing that in a pretty refined way this week. And then that's samasati, and then samasamadhi is cultivating the collectedness or concentration, so focus. So another aspect of the meditative mind. And formally in the Eightfold Path, it's actually developing these strong states of concentration. But really, any cultivation of concentration that we do is beneficial. Helps us to, along with mindfulness, know what's happening in the moment. And then it's also actually purifying for the mind to have collectedness rather than scatteredness too. So those are the elements of Eightfold Path that we actually have been cultivating here and that you can continue to cultivate even when you leave retreat. So we'll talk more tomorrow about, you know, ways to do this, so we don't need to leave before it's time, but you know, there are ways in which you can connect with different Dhamma groups in your area to continue to have wise company, have support in practicing meditation, continue to develop right view. And then we can actually, you know, look for opportunities to take generous action, to let go of what we don't need in life, to practice kindness and support for others, for the community, for the world also, even for the planet, environment. So that is what's called a Noble Eightfold Path. So people have written me many questions on these pieces of paper, and I should have clarified actually that I'm not very good at writing answers to questions on little pieces of paper, but I do want to answer all your questions, or as many as I can. So I'll pause here and see if here you have any questions about things that I've said now. And then if there is interest, also I can have a group later this morning, small group, if people want to ask other questions as well. So thank you for your attention to Eightfold Path. And I'll say also for today some recommendations. One is if you have been moving like relatively slowly, meditatively, it could be a good time to start moving regular pace for much of the time. Sometimes if you feel like it's good to gather the attention or something, then you could be a little slower in your movements. But you can start speeding it up a little bit and seeing, okay, can awareness meet this different speed? Can awareness meet this new speed of activity? The answer is yes, it can. Even if you don't notice like as many details, that's okay. But please try to remember, awareness can meet any experience. Also, for further talking practice, if you like, optional, you could we go down to that same place we did yesterday, the bottom tables by the sauna, and let's say like 11:30 to 12:30 could be also some informal talking practice if you want. And I kind of peeked my head in a little bit. I saw there was maybe some big groups of people, which is totally fine. But also in big groups of people, maybe each person gets less practice in the speaking part. Maybe you get more practice in the listening part. So also remember it's fine to like bow out, or if you want to just talk with one person, that's totally fine, something like that. And then for the afternoon, maybe we'll keep it quiet, but if you want to go for a walk, and if you want to talk to someone on the walk, a consenting person on the walk, like, maybe someone that you met or someone you already knew or something, and make it practice. So this isn't like, woohoo, we're done, okay? So this is totally like, try to bring awareness to the experience of interacting with another human being, trying to be aware of state of mind and stuff like that, yeah. So if you want to try and practice that in the afternoon, that means like you're going off somewhere. So we'll kind of leave this space here for people to continue to be in silence a little bit. And I kind of recommend with this going a little bit in and out, you know, like so maybe interacting more and then come back, sit steady, and then, you know, just play with it a little bit. So then when you go home, it'll be continuing part of the experiment, but not as sort of jarring, like it was totally like silent and then it's totally like everyone's talking to me. So let's see if there's any questions about either Eightfold Path or even something else about this period of transition that you have. This question, you could raise your hand. Yeah.
And then I noticed that sometimes I can still have quite some grasping about someone's choices, where it might be more skillful to just recognize that, of course, we don't control other people, and that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if through their own actions they harm themselves, then maybe they need to learn also that way, in the same way each.
Right.
But that's still the aspect that they might feel through their own actions or through the not seeing deeply into the causality might be also harming others and the world at large.
Right.
So, I mean, they might die in infinity, for example. So
right.
I mean, it can be very trivial things, it can be even just traveling, you know, whatever. So, how, from an equanimous point of view, can you respond to this?
Yeah, it can be challenging. There's a lot of different areas for, in some ways, like we have the five main precepts, you know, so like okay, if you know someone is going to kill someone else, like, you know, if it's something along the precept lines, then you will, then you could consider, like, doing something to stop them or something like that. But much of the stuff that people do is maybe not as grave as that, but still, like, not always good choices, right? So then it's kind of a, you know, a gray area, like how much to intervene, or will it even help to intervene? Sometimes it helps to reflect on one's own choices, because probably for everybody you could think of something that you do that you probably shouldn't totally do, right? Right? And it could be something small, like, oh, I don't go to bed early enough, or, yeah, I don't eat too much sugar, or I don't clean often, I don't know. You know, there's like a bunch of, I don't floss my teeth every day, I don't know. There's something that's like going to be, it's not a crime really, but I know it would be better if I do this for myself or for others, and I don't totally do that. So then it's good to remember that. That kind of helps take the like self-righteousness out of our system a little bit, and reflect like, oh, why is it that I don't do this? Like, why do I not do this thing that I know would be better to do, you know, if I do? And sometimes you don't totally, you haven't totally bought into like flossing your teeth. You're like, yeah, yeah, they say it's good, but I don't know, you know. But sometimes you know, but it's like, okay, I'm kind of lazy, or yeah, you could sort of explore what's the causality for me doing or not doing this thing, right? So then sometimes that can help us to have a little bit of understanding, like why someone does something that we think is harmful, you know? So maybe they don't think it's harmful, right? Or maybe they do, but they're a little lazy about it, or maybe they know it's harmful, but actually craving is too strong, right? Like, why do I eat too much sweets or something, you know? Maybe they're suffering in other ways, you know? There's like some other aspect of suffering that's kind of overshadowing their life right now. So this thing that we think is important is like kind of secondary issue to them, you know? Like, there's something happening in their family, or their health, or, you know, I don't know. So there's many different possibilities, right? So even from that, just reflecting a little like that can help us to have a little bit more balance. And really this, like, you know, everyone, all beings are heirs to their own karma thing, like really is true. So that being said, you know, if you feel strongly about something, you can try to talk to someone about it, you know? You can try and talk to them about it. But usually if we come at it from understanding point of view, then people are more likely to listen, you know, than if we come at it from like, I am right, you are wrong, I am good, you are bad, you must do as I say. So also you could think about times when someone has come to you like that, right? Like they think you're doing something wrong and they try to tell you, and how annoying it is, and how it does not usually make you want to do the thing that they're telling you, right? So, and then just a lot of compassion for the whole picture. So in the even the bigger picture of this whole thing is like, so this is samsara that we live in. So this is like the flawed, endless round of rebirth and suffering, you know. So you could notice if the mind is like, oh, I want things to be perfect, or I want it to be perfect in this way. And it's kind of the paradox of this path is like, you want to do your best to make things good in the world, right? Or to help people, but also know in some ways like it's part of this very flawed system, right? So I like in Zen they have these vows, right? Like, beings are numberless, I vow to save them all, you know. Or like, dharma doors are endless, I vow to, maybe it's like, enter them all or something. So in like corporate culture, they have this thing like SMART goals. You know, it has to be specific and attainable. And so these are not SMART goals, right? Like, if things are numberless, you're never going to succeed and save them all. But in some ways, I appreciate that the way it's said, because it orients you in this direction, but then you have to let go of the success of the results, because you're never going to get to the end. But still, it helps to point in that direction and keep moving, you know, keep walking. Yeah, thank you.
So one difficulty, actually, both on and off retreat, is that usually, well, particularly off retreat, almost any action, like, you know, saying, should I say this to that person, or should I do this, will be accompanied by multiple intentions.
Yes.
And some of them are wholesome and some of them are not.
Yep.
So I could think of, like, you know, I want to say this thing, and then part of it, I recognize that there's some wisdom there, or at least I think I recognize that there's some wisdom there.
Yeah.
Later, maybe I recognize that there wasn't.
Right.
But at least in the moment, you know, you do your best, and you think there's wisdom, but you also notice that, oh, okay, you know, if I say this, I'm going to sound smart, or something like that.
Right.
Which is not like, you know, it won't start World War III, usually.
Yeah.
But it's not wholesome as such. It's
like, right.
At least I will suffer, I know.
Sure.
And then, so sometimes, well, I don't know, I guess I just try to sort of, you know, reflect, like, okay, so if I only had this wise intention, then how would I act, or, like, how should I act to kind of maximize the gain for that intention, and then sort of kind of ignore these other.
Mm.
But sometimes that's hard.
Yeah.
And then also there's the fact that, like, when I first started noticing, you know, defilements more, I had a lot of aversion and sort of judgment to that. I, you know, it was almost like this is sin or something.
Right.
And, yeah. And the more I noticed them, the more, you know, depressed I became, because, you know, everything was bad, basically.
Yeah.
And all my intentions were bad.
Yeah.
I was defiled.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so that clearly wasn't a very constructive view.
Right.
And then there's also, like, even if you think that, okay, I'm going to get rid of these things, often you can't force it. You have to sort of see.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to let them play out to some extent to kind of learn from them.
Right.
But at the same time, that's also a good excuse for, you know, not practicing. Oh, I'm just studying the defilements.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's no easy answer to this, but
yeah.
You know, any sort of pro tips that you can give would be most helpful and appreciated.
Yeah, I think it's true that in any motion, you know, in any one action, like if, you know, it's considered there's like many, many mind moments, even within a snap of a finger or a blink of an eye, right? So even in one gesture, like say there's a gesture of offering something to someone else.
Right.
It could be like there's a few moments of, like, you know, pure generosity, and then there's like, did people see me doing this? I'm actually a really good person, aren't I? You
yeah.
know, like sense of self, and then back to being generous, and then maybe doubt, like, well, why am I helping them? They never help me. Then back to generous, then like, again, like a sense of ego, like that. So really our practice is to observe all that stuff. And like you're saying, it's helpful to just notice that, you know, like, yeah, word defilement is a little bit harsh in some way. Like I don't often use that word, myself, but I know that's part of the sort of like words that translations that, Utejaniya uses here. So I was using a little bit, but, in some ways for me, that's why this sort of pushing, pulling, or sort of what's the lens that falls is a little bit more, it's easier to see that without having it be a lot of judgment. So we want discernment, but not necessarily judgment, you know, maybe also a nuance of view. So like you're saying, basically you do your best, you know, you do your best, and then we try with this habit of continuity of awareness to stay present with curiosity in the movement of anything and see like the varying intentions in any action or even any speech, you know. And I think a good part of the path is also feeling the suffering, you know, like, not necessarily, you know, good means like a significant part of the path is feeling suffering at more and more refined levels. And then learning from that in some way. But we really have to feel the burn of it, you know, like that. And then from feeling the burn of it, see if we can just have that be learning. And because there might be some other kilesa that arises in relationship to that, like, oh, I'm a bad person, you know, taking ownership of that in some way. And then, okay, see if we can see that patterning. Because it's all just, like, habitual stuff playing out. So if we can take it as a, you know, like, opportunity for learning, for seeing, and that the stuff that we don't see is going to be there anyway, and it's going to be driving us, and we just do our best to, you know, plant the wholesome seeds, try to cultivate, you know, generosity, goodwill, compassion, and already know we're not going to do it perfectly. And you don't need to wait till you can do it perfectly to do something, you know. Otherwise, we're going to wait a long, long time, right, to even take one action, right? So, yeah. So you do your best. Do your best and try to make it a interesting, like, place of interest to learn about.
Yeah. And if you needed to practice perfectly to make progress, no one would ever make any progress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I kind of have a similar question, because I've noticed that I had like similarly pessimistic view of this area of our life, which is you know, the corporate culture, the basically, you know, companies work and so on. Yeah. Like it's all about money and so on. And I've noticed that it's probably not true. I mean, there can be, as everywhere, there can be wholesome and unwholesome.
Right.
Kind of approach. So I was wondering whether you could share, because you're both from San Francisco, so like a sense, you know, central tech hub, right? But also part of this new Dhamma tradition reborn in the West. And I was thinking, you know, all these attempts to introduce mindfulness, like at Google and so on.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, one approach is that it's like fake, watered down, and so on.
Mm.
And on the other hand, it is some kind of seed, right? So, I don't know whether could you just share some thoughts on what, you know, to what extent it's reasonable to think about introducing some actual change, or and to what extent it's actually delusion of, you know, all the startups thinking, you know, we're going to change the world, but actually they, you know, something, almost always it's some kind of like a delusion.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, different companies can be making things like that all of us use, right? So like, you know, someone made the wood here, someone made the chairs, someone made the zafu, sabutans, the glass, like everything here was made, right? By, so they're useful things, and none of these is like, considered wrong livelihood, you know, to engage in making windows or something, right? Like, you know, within that, though, you could say, like, oh, there's different ways to do that, better or worse, both sort of environmentally, you know, in terms of harm for the planet, and then in terms of, like, okay, what is the culture of the company? You know, like, is it a culture in which people are treated with respect? Is it a culture in which there is habitual harm? And yeah, I think so many people spend like a majority of their time at work. So it matters what it's like in the environment of work. Just like it matters what it's like in the environment of the family. You know, is it like abusive family or is it a healthy, loving family? And then, yeah, is it abusive culture at work or healthy culture? So, yeah, you can come back to the precepts as like main kind of guidelines around this stuff. And even if the other stuff isn't happening, usually there's something around speech that could be attended to, you know, but it gets more complex when you get into, like this area of tech companies that you're mentioning. I think, yeah, we're all just starting to learn what's the impact of a lot of different kinds of technology on our lives and how to do that in some ethical way. You know, and so I think the companies are still sort of figuring it out, and in the context of also making money. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing to make money, but if that's your only thing and you totally ignore any ethics, then it is not a good thing, right? So some of these companies have brought mindfulness in for different reasons, and it can be helpful, but sometimes it can be sort of like papering over the fact that otherwise it's a super stressful, toxic culture, you know. So then, you know, giving people like 15 minutes to breathe is not going to solve everything for sure. But sometimes there are people who do connect with it, and then they on their own will go and try and pursue Dhamma, you know, like they've heard this and then they pursue Dhamma. But also at some companies they have some more greater intention to, from this they start to realize actually ways in which the workplace is not healthy. And so then they do try to make greater cultural change, you could say, you know. So then, yeah, those of you who are in a position in your workplace, or, you know, even if you're not the CEO, maybe you run a team or a department, or even sometimes informally, you know, there's a bunch of cubicles and like there's like, okay, how do we interact in this area? Like, how do we talk to each other respectfully? So the way that you are can influence what the culture is there. So, yeah, it's definitely is worthy of attention and an aspect of creating a environment in which, like, we can cultivate wholesome intentions and, you know, basically in which, like, people can be happier and have more well-being, too. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about ecology? Because I think about the mind's ecology is the highest priority, and I can't go over it. Mm. So I'm accepting what I can accept at the moment.
Mm.
Of your thoughts, of your feelings, of the things I'm sensing in this community or whatever.
Mm.
But I can't like process that harder
than
it can process in me. And it's systematic as well.
Mm.
But what do you think?
Let's see, so maybe, I'm not sure if I'm understanding you correctly, but maybe it's like, so one step is to understand what shows up in the mind as nature in some way, right? Like as...
not so structures, but all the way the ecology of my own system.
Yeah, yeah. But as you sort of study this in some way, like you could consider these Dhamma teachings of right view or what's cause of suffering. Like you take them and then it's actually to apply them to what you are observing, you know, as the ecology of your own mind. So, for example, like you could see some pattern that's like, I get really mad about this and then I hate the people who are doing this, right? Like let's say like you are, you know, get mad at the noise in the kitchen, right? Or something like that. And they're like, ah, we're meditating. I can't believe they're making so much noise. And, you know, so then you could notice that and notice that in the moment, like, oh, okay, it's suffering. And if I continue, like, if I cultivate this, if I just sit here and I'm like, yeah, they're terrible people, you know, like, ruminating on it, it's getting bigger and bigger, you know? And, or you could see like, oh, okay, this is like not, this is not helpful. Like, this is not, cultivating helpful states of mind. So then either, okay, maybe I should move away. Or maybe I could practice, oh yeah, what's that thing? Oh yeah, okay, the sound could just be unpleasant. Okay, let's see. Is it possible? I could notice there's a difference between the unpleasant of the sound or just the sound and the reactivity. Or I could see, oh, it's actually only unpleasant because I have some view that they shouldn't be doing this. So that's this view, and you can see how the view influences the perception, you know. So in that way, there's sort of, you know, what seems to be the ecology of the mind, but then we could apply Dhamma to really try and understand, like, oh, what's suffering? What's the cause of suffering? Like that. And then, in that way, like, we don't have to take everything to be just, like how it is in a certain way. I mean, you do, like, take it how it is right now, but also see what aspects are wise, what aspects are, less wise, you know. Yeah. So in some ways, we're kind of like, you think almost like we're raising ourselves more. Like you raise children and you see like, oh, they have some impulses that are kind and generous. And even in very small children, you can see it's very sweet that, you know, they'll like give something to someone else or like put a band-aid or, you know, something like that. But you also can see that they can be horrible, right? Like they can just like whack each other or, you know, like no compulsion, like no hidden. So yeah, if they're going to be violent to each other, then if you're a good parent or auntie or grandparent, then you have to teach them not to do that, right? So it's like, okay, if you want that toy, you have to use your words. And ask them to share. You know, you can't just go and whack them and take it from them, right? So it's like that with our own mind. You know, to like try and notice these things, and it's not always easy. You know, it's like it takes training for sure. But
as a reflection of the conversation of that, if I know that someone is harming herself or doing something harmful to the others, should I go there and say, "Hey, you're doing right or you're doing wrong"? She or he is doing it's her way.
Yeah.
And we don't know what is the truth, which this person is living at the moment.
Right.
If the truth is well for her or for him, it's fine.
Right.
And something else will come, as with the beliefs as well.
Yeah, so different in different cases. Right. Yeah, different in different cases. So it's a little similar to the question earlier here from Sebastian also, right? Like, yeah, sometimes it may be good to engage, intervene, and sometimes maybe let it go, right? Yeah. And I share one, speaking of the little kids metaphor I told to some people in the interviews, you know, because sometimes it feels really hard, like something comes very strongly that we're trying to pay attention to, like, we have a habit of mind like anger or a habit of mind, and we say something that we regret or something like that, and it feels like, wow, how am I ever going to learn? It seems like it happens so fast. Like, how could you let go of this pattern? So we could remember also that at some point in our life, none of us were toilet trained. Right? So none of us knew what the physical sensation was that told you that you had to go to the bathroom, right? So like little kids, they'll just like go whenever, right? And then little by little, like they start to notice, like you train them to notice what that is. And then maybe for a period of time, they could do it during the day, you know, they could notice. And then, but then they can't do it at night. And then after a while, like most of us are like pretty well trained, like even at night, you're aware of these sensations somehow. So you wake up at night, you don't even know how it happens anymore, right? It's become so trained. You know, you have to go to the bathroom, you can just go, you come back, go to sleep. It's not a problem, right? So in some ways, we have trained ourselves to be sensitive to this particular aspect of our physical body, right? So similarly, it's possible we could train ourselves to be aware of these unwholesome states. You know, what does it feel like when it's just beginning, right? What does it feel like when anger is gathering or when whatever it is, the jealousy or whatever the state is gathering before it's already like pooped on the floor, you know, in front of everyone, right? But in the beginning, it's always going to be like a lot of mess, right? That's pretty much the beginning of the toilet training is there's a big mess. But little by little, we start to develop, and then sometimes we can notice when it's fully blown, then we notice a little sooner, and then maybe it can become like fairly, like almost like it feels instinctual, like we could notice, oh yeah, this is what it feels like. So now as adults, like you could notice, you know, maybe even as I started to talk about this, you're like, oh yeah, I do have to go to the bathroom, right? But then for most adults, you could notice that and then be like, okay, I could wait 5 minutes, that's fine, right? It's not like, boom, right? So it's inspiring to consider that at one time you didn't know how to do that and now you're so good at it. Everyone, congratulations, you know. So like that, it's possible we're going to get mentally toilet trained, you could say. Like, so, but like in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of messes. So also, you know, even when you practice, if you practice, you know, speech and stuff like that, then, yeah, just be very patient and kind. Like there's going to be different messes along the way. But, yeah, we just have the orientation to try to learn and, maybe be a little forgiving to ourselves and others as we're all still wearing diapers and aspiring to be trained in this way. And then, yeah, we do the best we can with it. So. So maybe we just sit for a little bit here, quietly. just relaxing, resting in awareness.